Hi guys, welcome to the Arvin's show. Today is my first episode after like 2 or 3 months or even more. And don't worry about the background noise, it's just raining. And okay, so let's go with the topic of this episode, which is a chapter from the King Chronicles, which is the book I am actually reading. It was written by Rick Riordan, who's one of my favorite writers, and I am at chapter 21 of the first book, because this is a trilogy. So, 21. Aunt Kitty to the rescue. I'd seen pictures of the creature before, but pictures didn't come close to capturing how horrible it was in real life. The set animal, Buzz said, confirming my fear. Far below, the creature prowled the base of the monument, leaving tracks in the new fallen snow. I had trouble judging its size, but it must have been at least as big as a horse, with legs just as long. It had an unnaturally lean, muscled body with shiny reddish-gray fur. You could almost mistake it for a huge greyhound, except for the tail and the head. The tail was reptilian, forked at the end with triangular points like squid tentacles. It lashed around as if it had a mind of its own. The creature said was the strangest part, its oversized ears stuck straight up like rabbit ears, but they were shaped more like ice cream cones, curved inward and wider on the top than the bottom. They could rotate almost 360 degrees, so they could hear anything. The creature's snout was long and curved like an anteater's. Only anteaters don't have razor-sharp teeth. Its eyes are glowing, I said. That can't be good. How can you see that far? Sadie demanded. She stood next to me, squinting at the tiny figure in the snow, and I realized she had a point. The animal was at least 500 feet below us. How was I able to see its eyes? You still have the sight of the falcon, Buzz guessed. And you're right, Carter. The glowing eyes mean the creature has caught our scent. I looked at her and almost jumped out of my skin. Her hair was sticking straight up all over her head, like she'd stuck a finger in a light socket. Buzz? I asked. What? Sadie and I exchanged looks. She muttered the word scared. Then I remembered how Muffin's tail would always poof up when something startled her. Nothing, I said. Though if the set animal was so dangerous that it gave our goddess light sucked air, that had to be a very bad sign. How do we get out of here? You don't understand, Buzz said. The set animal is the perfect hunter. If it has our scent, there's no stopping it. Why is it called the set animal? Sadie asked nervously. Doesn't it have a name? If it did, Buzz said, you would not want to speak it. It is merely known as the set animal, the Red Lord's symbolic creature. It shares his strength, cunning, and his evil nature. Lovely, Sadie said. The animal sniffed at the monument and recoiled, snarling. It doesn't seem to like the obelisk, I noticed. No, Buzz said. Too much heart energy. But that won't hold it back for long. As if on cue, the set animal leaped onto the side of the monument. It began climbing like a lion scaling a tree, digging its claws into the stone. That's messed up, I said. Elevator on stairs? Both are too slow, Buzz said. Back away from the window. She unsheathed their knives and sliced through the glass. She punched out the window, setting off alarm bells. Freezing air blasted into the observation room. You'll need to fly, Buzz yelled over the wind. It's the only way. No, Sadie's face went pale. Not the kite again. Sadie, it's okay, I said. She shook her head, terrified. I grabbed a wren. I'll stay with you. I'll make sure you turn back. The set animal is halfway up, Bast warned. We're running out of time. Sadie glanced at Bast. What about you? You can't fly. I'll jump, she said. Cats always land on their feet. It's over 100 meters, Sadie cried. 170, Bast said. I'll distract this set animal, buy you some time. You'll be killed, Sadie's voice sounded close to breaking. Please, I can't lose you, too. Bast looked a little surprised. Then she smiled and put her hand on Sadie's shoulder. I'll be fine, dear. Meet me at Reagan National, Terminal A. Be ready to run. Before I could argue, Bast jumped out the window. My heart just about stopped. She plummeted straight toward the pavement. I was sure she'd die, but as she fell, she spread her arms and legs and seemed to relax. She hurtled straight past the set animal, which let out a horrible scream like a wounded man on a battlefield, then turned and leaped after her. Bast hit the ground with both feet and took off running. She must have been doing 60 miles an hour easy. The set animal wasn't as agile. It crashed so hard, the pavement cracked. It stumbled for a few steps but didn't appear hurt. Then it loped after Bast and was soon gaining on her. She won't make it, Sadie fretted. Never bet against a cat, I said. We got to do our part. Ready? She took a deep breath. All right, before I change my mind. Instantly, a black-winged kite appeared in front of me, flapping its wings to keep its balance in the intense wind. I willed myself to become a falcon. It was even easier than before. A moment later, we soared into the cold morning air over Washington, D.C. Finding the airport was easy. Reagan National was so close, I could see the planes landing across the Potomac. The hard part was remembering what I was doing. Every time I saw a mouse or a squirrel, I instinctively veered toward it. A couple of times I caught myself about to dive, and I had to fight the urge. Once I looked over and realized I was a mile away from Sadie, who was off doing her own hunting. I had to force myself to fly next to her and get her attention. It takes willpower to stay human, the voice of Horus warned. The more time you spend as a bird of prey, the more you think like one. Now you tell me, I thought. I could help, he urged. Give me control. Not today, birdhead. Finally, I steered Sadie toward the airport, and we started hunting for a place to change back to human form. We landed at the top of a parking garage. I willed myself to turn human, but nothing happened. Panic started building in my throat. I closed my eyes and pictured my dad's face. I thought about how much I missed him, how much I needed to find him. When I opened my eyes, I was back to normal. Unfortunately, Sadie was still a kite. She flapped around me and cawed frantically, ha ha ha. There was a wide look in her eyes, and this time I understood how scared she was. Bird form had been hard enough for her to break out of the first time. If the second time took even more energy, she could be in serious trouble. It's all right, I crouched down, careful to move slowly. Sadie, don't force it. You have to relax. Ha! She tucked in her wings. Her chest was heavy. Listen, it helped me to focus on Dad. Remember what's important to you. Close your eyes and think about your human life. She closed her eyes, but almost instantly cried out in frustration and flapped her wings. Stop, I said. Don't fly away. She tilted her head and gurgled in a pleading way. I started talking to her the way I would to a scared animal. I wasn't really paying attention to the words. I was just trying to keep my tongue calm. But after a minute, I realized I was telling her about my travels with Dad and the memories that had helped me get out of bird form. I told her about the time Dad and I got stuck in the Venice airport and I ate so many cannoli I got sick. I told her about the time in Egypt when I found a scorpion in my sock and Dad managed to kill it with a TV remote control. I told her how we'd gotten separated once in the London Underground, and how scared I was until they'd finally found me. I told her some pretty embarrassing stories that I'd never shared with anyone, because who could I share them with? And it seemed to me that Sadie listened. At least she stopped flapping her wings. Her breathing slowed. She became very still, and her eyes didn't look so panicked. "Okay, Sadie," I said at last, "I've got an idea. Here's what we're going to do." I took Dad's magic box out of its leather bag. I wrapped the bag around my forearm and tied it with the straps as best as I could. "Hop on." Sadie flew up and perched at my wrist. Even with my makeshift arm guard, her sharp talons dug into my skin. "We'll get you out of this," I said. "Keep trying, relax, and focus on your human life. You'll figure it out, Sadie. I know you will. I'll carry you until then." "Come on," I said. "Let's find Bust." With my sister perched on my arm, I walked to the elevator. A businessman with a rolling suitcase was waiting by the doors. His eyes widened when he saw me. I must have looked pretty strange. A tall black kid in dirty, ragged Egyptian clothes, with a weird box tucked under one arm and a bird of prey perched on the other. "How's it going?" I said. "I'll take the stairs." He hurried off. The elevator took me to the ground level. Sadie and I crossed to the departures curb. I looked around desperately, hoping to see Bust, but instead I caught the attention of a curbside policeman. The guy frowned and started lumbering in my direction. "Stay calm," I told Sadie, resisting the urge to run. I turned and walked through the doors. Walked through the revolving doors. Okay, so this is the first part. Maybe I'll continue later. Bye.